The child within you is the original you that God made you to be. I'm learning these two words, Christian and science, helping me to find this child within me, to be able to recognize that there's a moment, every moment, that we can receive this message that heals us and heals others. It's not a personal power, but turning to the power that is an absolute, unconditional, impartial, and loving power. Some of you have may not have heard these two words put together, Christian and science. Christian is the adjective and science is the noun. We are studying what this science is all about. Science, written with capital S, has this quality of Christian. Well, first of all, science, like any other sciences that you have studied in as a student, science is about discovering the law that had already been in existence. My English teacher in middle school taught me the word discover when she had a beautiful scarf like this one and taught us by saying, children, you're learning a word, discover today. And the meaning of discover is to this, the cover, to see what was always there. I remember this description or definition after I started studying Christian science, because we are not creating or inventing science. This is a science that belonged to all of us, belongs to all of us. It's written with capital S. And just as I said, it is always revealing the new reality, the freer reality, the more cooperative reality, the reality that is for everyone. Just like we are using this online service here, Zoom, webinar, we call it, that it can reach more people than if I was just standing somewhere in the hall in your city. It makes this universality of science more available, and that alone describes why it is Christian. I don't mean Christian in just the religious sense, but Christian in the way that Christ Jesus had demonstrated, that it is loving, it is generous, it is forgiving, it is patient, and it's most of all, it's revealing. Well, Christ Jesus, the title is Christ, the Christ, comes from my sense of understanding is that he embodied this Christ and understood this Christ, which really means, coming from the word Emmanuel, God with us. There was no separation. When we focus on this God that is impartial, loving, love without limit, and life without fear, we can really see that this God is not somehow going to punish you, just like what we are experiencing now. Some people might say, well, we are punished. By whom? If God had to punish us for some wrongdoing that we're doing, and if we accept that God made us, the Creator must have made some mistakes. No, we are reminded of who we are when we have challenges like this. In fact, the good within us is more emphasized, even magnified, when we are faced with challenges, and we come together to find answers. Now, that doesn't mean that someone up there is trying to punish us. It's trying to bring us a freer reality. It's on the cusp of really learning what Jesus was trying to teach us. Well, Christ to me is the light. In the darkness, if you have someone walking, even with the lit match or a candlestick, the whole room is brighter. The darkness does not have power. He came to show us that each one of us can actually strike that match and see this light that's already within us. And to be able to see each other better, we need to have this light that we call Christ. Mary Baker Eddy discovered the science of Christ, or Christian Science. Sometimes she called it this discovery, the discovery of divine science. As I said, she didn't invent this, she discovered it. And so discovering this science had given her an understanding of why these healings that she was reading in the Bible took place. Well, she was born in 1821 and then lived to 1910. That's a long span of the experience on this earth. She had lived through the Civil War, and the year after the Civil War ended, she discovered this science of Christ when she experienced what you may call miracle, a sudden well-being of her physical body after she fell on ice and hurt herself critically, and was reported that she was injured to a degree that many people did not expect, including those who were around close to her, felt that she may be passing. In the darkest moment, as I have described, when in the darkest moment she reached out to the Bible, as it was a customary in her time to reach out to the Bible for insights, for help, for support, for comfort. And she happens to open to the section where Christ Jesus healed a man with a withered hand. And the healing was so instantaneous in that Bible. After reading that healing account, Mary had this change in her consciousness. And I call this a shift in consciousness taking place. A shift in consciousness had given her a sense of new reality from all bound by material laws and limitation. She saw everything was spiritual, freer, brighter. In fact, she lifted herself, changed her clothes, and walked out from her room. You can read about her experiences in her biographies, or if you Google Mary Baker Eddy Library, you can read about her, but also about many healings that she had experienced herself and also whom she had healed. Well, this experience I called an epiphany. According to the dictionary, epiphany means a sudden intuitive realization of insight into reality. A sudden realization, intuitive realization of insight into reality. So that to me is the message directly coming from the divine. In fact, this divine is also called mind in the Bible. We use mind with capital M as also another name for God. But she was aware of new reality, and she spent many months after that to try to connect the dots. Connecting the dots, meaning her healing and all the healings that she read in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. And she started to also heal others as she was studying why this healing had taken place. I would say that many people who have experienced the healing like she did may dismiss this as a miracle, but she had a very scientific mind. She did not just dismiss this as a religious faith experience, but she wanted to know the science behind this. And that makes it very special because science, again, other than the fact that it reveals the law that already being in existence, science also wants to free us. And she wanted to share this science. One wonderful characteristic of science is that it does not have border. The science that we understand, say discovered in Japan or in America or in Europe, it's immediately shared with others. And you know, when we see the Nobel, like chemistry, the prize for Nobel Prize for chemistry or physics in medicine, and all those scientists collaborate. There's something about science that brings us together. So in a way, that her interest in naming and finding this science was to make sure that what she discovered was also available to all. And available to all people, all ages as well. And as I was mentioning how wonderful the children can teach us this being still a child, not needing to be reminded of who they are, that they have this direct connection with the divine, that I have learned in my study of Christian Science a lot, great deal from children. My husband is from Colorado, and I had several occasions to climb up the Rockies. And as you know, it's quite high. And most of the time we go on 11,000 feet or so. But thanks to his sister who owned many lamas who were trained to carry heavy loads, we can just climb, just concentrate on climbing and breathing. But one time we were up in the mountains and took several lamas with us. And we were supposed to go up to about 11,000 feet and pitch the tent and go out fishing. But as we were approaching this plateau where we were going to pitch the tents, we began to hear that one of the lamas was coughing in a very disturbing way. And as we stopped and hitched him onto one of the trees, it got worse. It got deeper. The sound really made people afraid. And finally, we heard the owner of the llama say, well, that llama has to go. The llama, he said, had to go. And I just thought, well, that llama should go to the vet. But no. We had a six-year-old who was also going up into the Rockies with us. She screamed in a very loud voice, no, to him, the owner of the llamas, and said, my mother doesn't say that when I cough. Well, what she meant was, I later found out, he was saying, well, that llama is too sick to be useful. I'm going to kill him. And the six-year-old Haley was saying, no, when I cough, my mother doesn't say that. She was so serious. She looked at me and said, Fujiko, we're not going out fishing. We're not going fishing. We are going to stay here. We're going to pray for that llama. His name is Tony. We're going to pray for Tony. And I just looked at him in, you know, really surprised. And she said, you always talk about God and prayer. We are staying here and pray for him. And I couldn't say no, even though I was really looking forward to going out into the lakes after all hours of climbing up the mountains. Well, she said, how do I pray? Well, I explained to her that God is the Father of us, but also the ones that made Tony, the beautiful Lama, the dear Lama, the God's creation. But on the back of my head, I was thinking, I have never seen the ugliest Lama as Tony, because he had an underbite. So my words are saying something, and back of my head, I'm thinking something else. But Haley is taking in all what I was saying and immediately sat down and started to pray. So I followed her and sat down. For a couple of minutes, we were very quiet. Everybody was gone to the lake. We were there alone, and it was quiet. Soon, Haley pulled my jacket and said, "Fujiko, the Lama is healed. Tony is healed." My eyes were still closed, and I told her, "Wait," putting my hand down. And of course, she listened, and she was probably closing her eyes and continuing to pray. But why did I say wait? I said wait, just in case I hear one more cough out of Tony's mouth. I was doubting that healing could take place so quickly. Well, soon Haley pulled my jacket more firmly and said in a very firm voice, "Fujiko, Tony is healed." Well, I like to share this healing because it keeps reminding me that when we say prayer, it's not like some other people might say, prayer is just placebo or positive thinking. It is not positive thinking. If the animal that we are praying for was coughing so deeply, can be healed so close, the instantaneous healing. I did not have my watch to check how soon the healing took place, but it was very quick healing. It reminds me of what this textbook written by Mary Baker Eddy talks about it when we pray. Oh, sorry, at the other side, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She writes in here many useful instructions for all of us to be an effective child, to be able to experience these healings. She says here on page 392, "Stand Porter at the door of thought, admitting only such conclusions as you wish realized in bodily results. You will control yourself harmoniously." Standing Porter at the door of thought, Haley was admitting only such conclusions as she wished realize in Tony. She kept herself harmonious, more than I was. Although she was very upset when she heard what the owner of the Lama said, immediately turning to this fact that God loved this animal and knowing that there is this only one conclusion, the result that she expected and we realized, which was healing. That she taught me that clear thinking and focusing on one result. It was not about death. It was not about prolonging symptoms. It was not about if or what if. It was about done. It was done. And so it really made me think of also why she could do this, why she could immediately feel that certainty. And I felt the quality that children have very valuable, which is not to separate him or herself with things that's happening out there. They have the sense of oneness. Whatever is happening out there, they have what you may call in English empathy, or what I may say compassion, as Jesus had when he saw the multitude. He didn't just feel sorry for them and have kind of a superficial love for others. That word compassion started to have more meaning to me when Jesus had compassion when he saw the multitude. He was not out here as a master healer and those who are needing some healing. He was knowing that those who are, whether they're hundreds or thousands, was in the fold of our Father, God that he understood to mean that looks after his children or her children. I keep saying he, we say God as Father, but in his Aramaic tongue, the word that is translated into Father also means mother, father and mother. So in a way, it's a parent. It's a divine parent caring for those. That's the kind of compassion that he had. And Haley, from what I understood from witnessing that healing, had that same understanding that to me, ugly llama was not just out there as an animal, poor animal with some problem. That animal, Tony, was included in this fold. Mary Baker Eddy explains about this oneness in her book here. She says, as a drop of water is one with the ocean, a ray of light one with the sun, even so God and man, Father and Son, are one in being. This is on page 361. For the scriptures read, for in him we live and move and have our being. As a drop of water is one with the ocean. Imagine yourself being a drop of water in the ocean. I'm sure you have good imagination. If you are a drop of water in that one ocean, you may not know the vastness. It's unfathomable, the depth and the greatness of the oceans. But you are still part of that ocean. If you are a drop of water in that ocean, when the ocean is moving with the tides, you are also moving in it. So it does make sense. We live and move and have our being. If you imagine yourself being a drop of water in that ocean, the llama was also part of this ocean. We have dominion to embrace who we love in our own heart, to put them in the same ocean that is living life. It also says a ray of light, one with the sun. That radiating that light from the source is constant. It doesn't stop. It is moving us. That's the life without fear, because we know where it's coming from. This life is not arbitrarily created by humans. That's not the kind of life I'm talking about. This life has a source that never ends. That life is something that we know as our origin. Early on in my studies, when I had this excruciating pain in my gum and tooth, I went to the dentist, and the dentist said I needed to have a surgery because it was a very advanced stage of abscess tooth, and the whole gum was swollen. And she even told me that you have a Russian roulette in your mouth. Well, I didn't learn this phrase Russian roulette in your mouth in my English lessons when I was learning English in Japan. So I had to ask my husband what it meant. And he said, you know, as you know, it's an awful description about what it was. Well, when he described what it meant, the pain got worse. So I called a Christian Science practitioner, whom anyone can call who seeks, if you're seeking healing through prayer. I was still new, so I didn't even have my copy of Science and Health or my Bible. I started to go to Sunday service, and Wednesday we have a testimony meeting where people share how you use the ideas from these two books. But other than that, I was really new. So this practitioner didn't even say, well, you are really new and you need a book first. No, he was very calm. And I understood later, he was calm because he knew where he came from. And he knew where I came from. Not that I came from Japan, but he knew this source, that I came from this life without fear. And I don't I don't remember when it was that the pain left me, whether it was while I was speaking to him or when I hang up the phone or when 2 hours later, so I realized that I had no pain. Well, the following day, I was supposed to go back to the dentist. She examined my mouth really thoroughly and said this one thing, Fujiko, the pain is surely to come back, because she trusted that x-ray and what she saw a day before, that when the pain was very excruciating. And she said, the pain will come back. Well, it has been 30 years or so since she said that. I don't remember which tooth it was or which part of gum it was. It never came back. So I had to choose, which reality should I choose? Should I continue to study this science of Christ, Christian Science, where this practitioner was so calm and loving, didn't put any condition that I need to somehow practice a regimen before I even receive his blessing? In fact, it wasn't his blessing. He knew it was God's blessing for me. And it's blessing for each one of you. God is blessing you now. Right now, everybody seemed to be tuning into news or article, coping with this pandemic. What is going to subside this? Is it the vaccine? Is it the mask? You know, we all take good care of each other. We love our neighbor as ourselves. So whatever is supposed to be loving, we should really be practicing. But we know at the end of this whole thing, when it subsides, what we remember is how much fear were we clinging to versus how much hope we were keeping in our own hearts, and how much love did we have for one another. Whether or not we have the vaccine available for in your community, we need to start knowing right now that God has that vaccine for us first. And by protecting ourselves, knowing that we have this one source, life, written with capital L, without fear, this is the first protection. To receive the vaccine or not is up to each one of us. You have your family members, your community members, the workplace that may immediately require you to have it. And even in this student, as a student of Christian Science, we are all asked to think, pray, and decide for our own selves. That is the most important part, But what we all can do right now, even before the vaccines is available, is to first accept this idea that we come from this life without fear, that we can be protected right now and protect others by knowing this, that love is without limit, but life is without fear. The prayer that took place when Lama was healed didn't have many words. It was turning to this light, and each one of us, Haley and I, received that light that I was mentioning earlier. The Christ, the title of Jesus, that Christ light was shining even in the seemingly darkest moment. The Christ in this textbook is described in many ways, but I like to share one that has this element of message, because we have this direct connection with God to receive the messages. Christ, it says here on page 332, Christ is the true idea voicing good, the divine message from God to men, speaking to the human consciousness. Christ is a true idea voicing good, a divine message from God to men, speaking to the human consciousness. If we want to receive the messages, we need to keep our consciousness free of the so-called a trash-like ideas or a fear. We need to identify what are we afraid of and reverse this with this idea that we come from this love without limit. We come from life without fear. We are a drop of water in the ocean, moving in this divine source right now, not later. In our society, I have great respect for those who are supporting our lives. Anyone who is from, who is engaged in transportation here in Japan, although the number of people commuting are reduced, those who are the conductors, those who are attendant at the stations, they're diligently serving people. Those who are in the hospital, the nurses and the doctors, they have duties to help others. And I have great respect for them, because their goal is not to impose what they think is something permanent, but they're, as some may think, that these diseases just keep coming and we are doomed to suffer constantly, but they are really there to free us. And I have a great respect for this one cardiologist who lives in Boston, and his name is Dr. Barnard Lown, L-O-W-N. He received Nobel Peace Prize in 1985 with another person who is from a Soviet Union back then, a doctor, who together formed this group called International Physicians for Prevention of Nuclear War. As doctors, you would think that interest is only to get the heal physical symptoms, but he realized that the biggest enemy is not the country out there or within their own country ideologies, but this idea that if we continue to build the nuclear weapons, and in fact, if we use them, nobody, even physicians, couldn't help them. But anyway, I got to know him by listening to a radio program called Infinite Mind. That was a national public radio program. And in that program, Infinite Mind, he was sharing that one time a patient was brought in after a massive heart attack. And he did not know how to help him. It was to a degree that he had not known any medicine or procedure could help him. Yet one day the nurse noticed that this patient's vital signs started to improve. And in 2 weeks, this patient left. So when this patient came back for a checkup, Dr. Laun asked him, "What happened?" And the patient said he remembered clearly even the day and the time when he started to feel better. So the doctor said, "Please tell me." The patient said, "Doctor, you were congregating in the corner of my room with other physicians, and I heard you whispering to others saying, 'Go listen to that patient's heartbeat for the wholesome gallop.'" He asked them to listen to his heart for the wholesome gallop. The patient said, "I immediately looked at the clock, and somehow that time was stayed with him. So he could tell at what time he started to feel better." Well, what this patient didn't know was that in cardiology, gallop means a huge gap. So between the beat was a huge gap that even Dr. Laun, after a long practice in his field, had never heard such bad gallop that he told his colleagues cynically, he said, "Go listen to his heartbeat for the wholesome gallop." Well, the patient was healed. The doctor was wondering, where did that new heart come from? It was the same body, but it was completely healed. He said he had to really think deeply about what medicine was. He began to think that the words that the doctors use have great power. And if we understand that man is not made up of just bones and nerves, but they have heart, we need to also understand that patient's deeper sense of man having that spirituality. Nowadays, when he's interviewed, he doesn't talk so much about prescription or surgery. He talks a great deal about this, the word that we speak. He said he wrote a book called The Lost Art of Healing. And in it, he mentioned some of the cases that where the patients asked him not to put them on the examination table, but to just listen to them. By listening to their stories, and most of them are heartbreaking stories. And his presence there and being there, not just to collect data from the patient, but really listening to them. The patient had been healed. He says in the interview, that I heard, that somewhere in the Bible it says, "First bind up the broken heart." That's what he's doing more and more now. But I have a great respect for him because he was the first one to go around the medical schools in the United States to talk with those students who are to become the doctors, to ask them, beg them not to use words such as, "You have time bomb in your chest," or "You have a Russian roulette in your mouth." This is why I respect him and cheer for him, because these are the examples that we need to really understand as part of science. Science is not just in the beaker or in the operation room. Science is in between these two people listening to one another and actually listening to the divine message speaking to human consciousness. Well, I was wondering whether in this textbook, Science and Health, if Mary Baker had mentioned anything of this sort of healing. And everything she wrote here, she experienced, she prayed, and tried to find the words to describe how these things happen. And I found this in something that relates to this experience on page 198. She says, a patient's belief is more or less molded and formed by his doctor's belief in the case, even though the doctor says nothing to support his theory. His thoughts and his patients commingle, and the stronger thoughts rule the weaker. Hence the importance that doctors be Christian scientists. Scientists. We want scientists to have the sense of embracing the compassion. And that's what Dr. Laun has. And experiencing these healings where he may not use the medicine. In fact, he's an advocate of not overusing medication or procedures, the surgery. Maybe Eddie must have experienced something like this. A patient's belief is more or less, she says, molded and formed by his doctor's belief in the case. Dr. Laun knows about this textbook. He had been interviewed by the Christian Science periodicals, Christian Science Sentinel, 2003, February 17th issue. And the title of the interview is called For the Love of Healing. I know each one of you is seeking for healing for yourself or for others. We know that your child within you is already connected to that love without limit, life without fear. We know your oneness is permanent, has never been taken away. Every time you think of the need of feeling this oneness or being embraced by this love without limit, life without fear, imagine yourself as a drop of water in the vast ocean. You are part of this love, part of this life. Some years ago, I had an opportunity to witness the healing of blood poison caused by a bacteria infection that made my neighbor be hospitalized. That illness, I don't know the name of the illness, but that infection going into the bloodstream had caused some death in our community at that time. And there was a great deal of fear in the media. And almost every day we had these reports on how many people are infected, how many people or in the hospital. It's a little bit different, probably a degree is different from what's happening right now, but the fear was great. When I heard that she was hospitalized, I felt that I wanted to share this textbook because it helped me so much, but I didn't really know how to, because I was told by her husband, when you have this kind of infection, you cannot visit. Maybe I can write a letter. But I just felt like introducing a book with just a letter. And if she doesn't have a strength to read, what good would that be? And I did think perhaps maybe introducing this book to her husband. But it made me really think that perhaps the most important thing was for me to just pray how I could someday, I didn't really know when, to introduce Christian Science to her. One day I received a call from her husband who said, Tracy, that's my neighbor's name, Tracy is back home. And I just felt that it was a good news that she was feeling better. But he told me immediately that the doctor felt it was safer to stay at home than to stay in the hospital because she contracted another infection by being there. He asked me to visit her the following morning because he was leaving for a business meeting to another town. He wanted me to check on her and to walk the dog in the morning. So the following day, I did just that. I tried to walk into the room quietly, but of course, the dog finds you and makes a lot of noises. And I just wanted to keep her calm, but I was told to first check on Tracy before going to take this dog for a walk. So I looked for her, but as I was looking in towards her bedroom, she was coming out, holding onto the walls, shuffling her slippers. And finally, she propped herself down into the sofa and said, not good morning, Fujiko. But the very first thing she said was, Fujiko, it's God's will for me to die. I was so shocked. And the first thing I said was, no. No, Tracy. God does not will you to die or us to die. I don't remember what else I had said, but I had this book with me. I said, Tracy, I know this book helped me and many others. In fact, at the end of this book, the 100 pages consist of the letters sent by those who were healed simply by reading this textbook. I put this book down on the coffee table and said, I can read this book for you, or maybe your husband can read it for you. But I'm going to take Oreo for a walk first, because by this time, she is making lots of noise, wanting to go out. Well, the whole room that I was in was very dark because apparently the light was hurting her eyes. But when I opened the door and took Oreo for a walk, I was struck by this light, very bright spring light. The contrast was so strong. The dark room and then out this light. And immediately that bright light erased from my sense, my heart, that something as she had said was weighing on my heart. She said, God's will is for her to die. And I knew that my reply, no, was the truth. As I was walking in this bright spring light, the dog was showing me how to be joyful. And I was joyful. And after perhaps 20 minutes or so, I returned to this dark room again. I walked in. And you know how you're from bright room, you going in, it even looks darker. And I saw Tracy sitting at the same spot, but the book was open to a very first page of the preface. And I saw her tracing the very first line back and forth. And she looked up to me and said, Fujiko, I am so weak. I cannot focus my eyes. I am trying to read this, but I don't know what it means. Well, the words that she was tracing were these: to those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessings. To those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessings. Mary Baker Eddy chose this line as an opening to everyone. It starts with the word to those leaning on the sustaining infinite. Well, I said to Tracy, I will be back with some lunch for her to eat. But she looked at me and shook her head and said, no, I cannot keep anything down, so please don't bother to bring anything. Well, past my lunchtime, I came back with a little bit of something to eat. I totally forgot that what she said, don't bring. Something in me just prepared something for her. But this time, instead of coming in from the front door, I went in from the door, the furthest from her bedroom that leads to the kitchen. It has double door, one door leading to a little space, like a mud space we call mud room. You can take boots off. And then you step up for 3 or 4 steps into the kitchen after opening the second door. When I opened the second door, the room was bright. It was kitchen. And Tracy was standing there, fully dressed, wearing her spectacles as she normally does. She was standing there and said, hi, Fujiko, as if nothing had happened. To me, the contrast between leaving her at the darkest room, opening this book and telling me she couldn't understand anything, to her standing there, strong, straight, and even her complexion was not that of emaciating, pale looking one, but almost a pink, strong and happy. She said, she just said, Fujiko. Hi, Fujiko, is what she said. And I said, hi. But the first thing I said was, Tracy, what happened? Again, here I go again. I was not expecting, just like with the llamas. I was surprised. She said, I was looking at that book and something told me to take a shower. So I did. And as I was taking a shower, the thought came to me, I should not go back to that bed. I don't need to go back to the bed. In fact, I should change. And that's exactly what she did. Her husband told me the day before when he said she came back home. He told me that she was so weak that in the hospital, she had to have 2 nurses watching. She had to be sitting and looked after. She took shower by herself and changed. And when she walked out from the room, she said that she noticed the house was in mess. Her husband was trying to keep the home for about 2 months with taking care of 2 children, having a home business. And the first thing she thought was, well, the house is in mess. So she started to pick up things from the floor, started her first laundry. And she said she was just about to clean up the kitchen, which had piles of the plates. Well, later I found out from the following day, actually, her husband called me and said, Fu, that's how he called me, Fu, what happened yesterday? Well, so I tried to explain. I went there and I gave her the book and the book really helped me. And he started to say, oh, never mind. I had to beg her to go to bed at 10 p.m. at night. He said she was like the Energizer bunny. She won't stop moving. And he couldn't believe what happened. Well, then he told me that the doctor said, even if she recovered from the infection, it would have taken several months to fully recover, to regain her normal strength. This had happened on Monday. By the end of that week, on weekend, she was rollerblading with her children. And the following week, we had parent-teacher conference, which we all went to. And since we were very close in the time that we had these conference, the different teachers, but we were coming home together from the conference. And she began to share this. She said, Fujiko, I did not tell you, but my mother died when she was my age. I was again shocked. And she said, I was so angry. And I went to my school and asked my teacher. She went to Christian school. She asked her teacher, why did her mother have to die? She couldn't understand. Why did my mother die? And what the teacher said was, well, Tracy, your mother had to die for our sin. Well, that's what she was remembering, what she was taught as a child. That's why she said, it is God's will for me to die. I looked at her in her eyes and said, Tracy, do you believe that? She said, no. She was already a student of the Bible, but she decided to take up this textbook and became a student of Christian Science. She said, I want to teach my children about God that is love, that God doesn't punish. She wanted to, of course, understand what Jesus meant when he said for all of us to be able to heal as he did. How do we do that? So I said, you have these tools, these two books we use as pastor, Science and Health and the Holy Bible. And we have Sunday services where we read the Bible sermon lesson, not the minister, priest giving a sermon, but each one of us study during the week, and on Sunday, two lay people read from these two books. And every week we have new subject. I said, we have periodicals to study. And she just followed that. From the following Sunday, she started to come to the service where we read these two books, First Church of Christ Scientists in State College, Pennsylvania. These healing accounts that I had witnessed, and many others, some of them may be instantaneous, as we just talked about the Lama's case or Tracy's case. But the important thing for all of us is to know that science is not somehow absent before the healing took place. Science has always been with us. We are reminded of how God had made us to be his image and likeness, as we read in the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, that he made us in the image and likeness of himself, that we are made to reflect the source, the life, like the light that we are, a ray of light that's coming from the source of light, like a sun. We are never separated from our parent. Christ Jesus said God was our Father. He had given us this prayer, one prayer, our Father, or we call it the Lord's Prayer, because he understood what this Genesis meant. When we say we're made in the image and likeness of God, we are made like the children resembling their parents. The image and likeness of God is within us. Jesus said, I am in him, meaning our Father, and our Father, he in me. I and my Father are one. You and this source, love and life, are one in being. Science reveals and interprets. These are words by Mary Baker Eddy when she describes what science is. She says in a little booklet called No and Yes, science is that which reveals and interprets God and man. Interpreting and coming through the messages, the Christ message, the true idea voicing good, so that we can be moving forward and upward with a newer understanding. Looking back is not going to make us advance. We never look back, look at the rear mirror to drive. We don't have eyes on the back of our head. We look forward. And Mary Baker Eddy says here, willingness to become as a little child and to leave the old for the new renders thought receptive of the advanced idea. To me, what I'm learning in Christian Science is the constant advanced ideas that makes us free, makes us recognize what needs to be thrown out of the window and to keep our consciousness clear so we do have the true idea voicing good speaking to us clearly. Willingness to become as a little child. Are you willing to do this? Are we really looking forward to the new beginning every moment, just as the butterfly coming out of the cocoon? Nobody is pulling or nobody's pushing. It's being revealed, the caterpillar that was crawling on the ground, going into a cocoon, appearing, emerging as a butterfly. That image to me is taking place every moment. Nobody's looking back. Nobody can return to that caterpillar state. But I will end with this quote in this textbook. On page 485, she says, "Emerge gently from matter into spirit. Think not to thwart the spiritual ultimate of all things, but come naturally into spirit through better health and morals, and as a result of spiritual growth." Spiritual growth is the only thing that is taking place. Emerging gently as a child of God is the protection for you and for your loved ones. But thank you so much for listening to this talk, and look forward to that message coming from your Father, Mother God. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Fujiko. Would you like to take a moment and possibly field a couple of questions if there are?
Yes.
And so what we'll do, everybody who is in the webinar right now, you can refer to the question, the Q&A section, and maybe type in a question or a comment, and Catherine and I will read them out to Fujiko. And, you know, just for a few minutes, she's been so gracious with her time, but let's just see if there's anything out there. Meanwhile, we can just be quiet and listen.
We have one question. Can you post the lyrics to the Japanese pop song?
Okay, I will send it to, it's an unofficial translation, but I will send it to the host of this lecture, and perhaps you can share that with the person who just asked.
Absolutely, we can put it on our website. I also have another question here. It says, "Thanks for the wonderful messages. I'm wondering how to see my mom's passing as not part of God's choreography when, despite my sadness, the events following have launched my brothers and me forward. What are your thoughts on this?"
Yes, I think the biggest lie about our nature as a child of God is that somehow life, materially speaking, if we have this material senses to be the only senses that can assess the reality, that so-called death will end everything. But if we understand that, as I was explaining, if we come from this love without limit, and if we come from this life without fear, and if we are part of, as we were talking about, a drop of water being one with the ocean, your mother is still part of this, a drop of water one with the ocean, as you are there. And we miss people when they're not here. I know we miss the person, you know, talking to them, maybe eating with them, cooking with them, asking for advice. And they have had, you know, ways that relate to each one of us that we miss, that is so very special. But I think it's very important also to understand that we didn't, first of all, begin with so-called the human parents and end alone, just leaving this body to go somewhere in the darkness. We need to really see that our life started with this light. In Genesis, we read, God said, "Let there be light." That light makes us feel and know that we can see each other. In this light, that we see, can see each other as children of God. And if we are children of God, we cannot determine our existence governed by or defined by material senses, because material senses, as you know, is so limiting. You know, we can't even hear all different frequencies. The frequencies are so low that the elephants can hear, we cannot hear. You know, we cannot see beyond so many hundreds of miles with our bare eyes, unless we use a telescope. But even with telescope, we cannot see the infinite distance. So I think what we really need to take up this practice, first of all, is to really see yourself as part of the vast infinite, as Mrs. Eddie was talking about here, leaning on the sustaining infinite, to know that the mother's quality, your mother's quality and your quality, my quality and others are exactly the same. We are all part of and belong to this God. So we cannot be separated, not only from God, but from our loved ones. And I know the most important thing is to know that Christ, the true idea voicing good, speaking to our human consciousness. When my older sister passed, I was in Japan, but my daughter was with my husband back in Pennsylvania. I was praying about calling my husband to let them know that my sister had passed. This is many, many years ago. And it's very difficult because I knew my daughter, her niece, loved her. And that was the most difficult part for my husband to impart. But that morning after I told him, Mia, my older one, ran into my husband's bedroom and said, "Papa, Coco," that's my sister's name, "Coco came to my dream in this beautiful dress," because my sister always dressed nicely anyway, but she said she was in this beautiful attire, and she told me she's going to be away for a little bit, but I'm going to be all right. And she just looked at my husband, smiling, and my husband could not help but to cry. Well, I guess it's just he just cried out loud. He later said he wished he didn't, but that's what he was crying, was not because my sister had passed, but because Mia came to him first and said, Coco said she was going to be fine. He was comforted by those words. So I know there are experiences like that also with others. When we receive a message, when we need to, and you keep asking God, let me know, what is it that I can learn if my mom was here? So the important thing is to go back to the first chapter of Genesis. I am made in the image and likeness of God. So was my mother. So was others. And we're not manufactured year by year, disappearing year by year. We were always there from the very beginning when God said, let there be light. He made us as his children. Sorry, the answer was a little long.
Thank you so much, Bujiku. You know, there's a lot of well-wishers and a lot of gratitude, and many people are thanking you for your comments and for this lecture. I have a question here that I want to put two together because they're very similar. One person says, what if your physical problem has been going on for years? Another one is asking you, also thanking you for sharing, said, when faced with a physical problem, condition that is visible to others, how do you get beyond the suggestive fear of what others are thinking?
Did you say visible to others?
Visible to others. And then the problem going on for a long time.
I think what my understanding is that Christian Science is teaching me what love is. And in fact, in the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy says, the vital part, the heart and soul of Christian Science is love. Love, to me, no matter how long their challenges seem to going on, we cannot lose sight of love, loving yourself, but also to love others, people around us. We really need to see the first purpose is to live and to love. And if we start to feel that we might temporarily ask for help, we have Christian Science facilities where we have non-medical care. You may live in the area that you may not have that. You might have some help, which you cannot maybe do it yourself. But I think the most important thing is to first know that the purpose is to live and to love. Make sure that no matter how long this is going on, that you don't forget that love God has for you is never diminished. And the way we are seeking healing, we have the practical things that you might follow, but that doesn't make you less important or less of a Christian Scientist. I think it's more important to really see that you have a goal beyond your healing and say, well, I am continuing to serve God, so I need to be here. And I need to really love myself as God loves me. But Mary Baker Eddy, at one point when she was asked the similar question, she said, most important thing is to love. Love for those who are healing, but also for those who are working through this, to never give up.
Thank you so much.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Another question. There's many more messages of thanks, but another question is, in this age of COVID, what is your understanding of where our true immunity comes from? What is your daily prayer, not just for personal protection, but for the triumph of love over fear?
Well, I think in everything in Christian Science, we physically, we may do things practically every day, but behind it, we need to give reasons, motives of, say, if we are wearing masks, for example, going out, am I wearing it because I'm afraid? Or am I wearing it because I love everyone? That's, it might be a very small thing, but it changes my perspective of why I am doing certain things. In general, I think it's important to really see that even the air that we breathe, it's not just made up of what the chemistry will tell us, a biology or chemistry will tell us. We actually start to see that our atmosphere, our environment, as something is divine and sacred. In the Bible, when Moses encountered the voice of God, God says to Moses, take off your shoes because where you stand is a sacred ground. Of course, it's not like suddenly, if you see in the Hollywood movie, the ground that he's going to be standing will be suddenly bright and lit with gold or something. It's not a physical sense that we are really depending on, but really seeing that our environment is already divine and sacred. The air that we breathe in and out, that where the ground that we stand on is sacred. The words that we utter is not just a series of human opinions, but we are listening first. Maybe we don't need to say anything, but by listening and knowing that instead of describing things materially and leaning on divine, leaning on the material senses, we need to find the divine sense of things. If we are watching the news, I'm sure you do that, do you need to watch this so many times a day? Do you need to just check in one time a day, and then give the rest of your day the time to sanctify or to make spiritualize the event? Which what I mean is that we're not making light of, for example, the number of infections, but we are reversing and seeing that that number does not represent the limitation of who we are, but infinity, the love is actually knowing who we are. And when love sees us, the infection disappears. It's all taking place in our first thinking, but it also welcomes that true idea to be become part of our consciousness.
We want to thank everyone for all the questions and comments. And we want to once again, thank you, Fujiko, for taking the time and the inspiration to share love without limit, life without fear. We do so appreciate it. And I can tell you, I can speak for those around the world. I'm seeing folks from Kenya and from New Zealand and from Seattle and from Illinois. So you've inspired so much of the world, and thank you so much. For everyone else, you can go ahead and welcome to listen to the postlude that Colin Chan will play on our way out. And you're welcome to please visit our website for Menlo Park Church, First Church of Christ Scientists. And we will be, we will have this recorded lecture available online. And please reach out to us. You can always come on Sundays and Wednesdays, Sundays at 10 a.m. and Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. Thank you so much, Fujiko.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everyone.
God bless everyone.